Hysteria is brought to you by Books. This Mother's Day, give mom her flowers. She deserves the best. That's why you should send her farm fresh flowers from Books. That's short for bouquets.
And right now, you can get 25% off your entire Books purchase. Here's why everyone likes the Books company. Books is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano,
which I love. Books has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Books is simple. Go online, pick the delivery date, and you are done. Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Books now. And with 20% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma. Erin, I love my Books. I love a flower that lasts forever, and my Books arrangements really do last a full solid week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some sitting on my kitchen table right now, and they've been there for several days, and usually when I buy them at, like, the grocery store, they're sort of, like, starting to crap
fade out
pretty quickly. Yep. Not with Books. They stick around. They look beautiful. I like how they kind of slowly open up and become even more beautiful as they sit on your, you know, wherever
Absolutely,
you display them.
Because they're that fresh. So go to Books.com and use promo code Hysteria for 25% off. That's Books.com, promo code Hysteria. Books, promo code Hysteria.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I had a thought the other night that woke me in a state of panic and shock. And that thought was, do you remember those carpets that people used to put on their toilets?
Do you mean the ones that were almost expressly mauve?
Yeah, they were
dusty
all like
rose.
Dusty colors, like a dusty olive, a dusty mauve. Did you have those in your house?
Yeah. For sure. Up until probably like 84, 85. I'm lying. Okay. There may actually still be one in my childhood bathroom.
Okay. Like, how did we all not die of the plague with people having carpets on and around their toilets? Like, how did the generation between the 60s and the 80s survive?
You know, I've actually never thought about that, but that is true. I guess a petri dish would be a staggering understatement for what those moist rugs on top of the toilets were.
This week, we are joined by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Kara Klenk, and Lindy West to tackle the following questions. Why is the GOP still taking marching orders from a guy too crazy for Facebook? What's the latest in the fight to reform how the military handles sexual assault? How many ways are there to be a mother? And what happens when you're a teenager on a road trip and your car breaks down at night? All this and more right now. Okay, Alyssa, are you ready to get to the news today?
Erin, let's talk about the motherfucking news.
Okay, let's talk about the motherfucking news. So Donald Trump is facing every geriatric racist's worst nightmare. He is still not being allowed to post on Facebook. On Wednesday, Facebook's oversight board, which I find to be very, scary sounding. I picture them in a lair, you know?
Like the meanest Zoom alive.
Yeah, yeah. Or, like, when they meet in person, it's at, like, one of those Austin Powers supervillain tables with, like, chairs with pointy backs. But that's Facebook's oversight board in my imagination. In real life, they upheld the January ban that they imposed on America's Most Famous Loser, promising to revisit the issue again in 6 months, which is a little annoying because I kind of want to be done with this.
Totally.
I'm just keep him off Facebook, you know? Like, he keeps promising to launch his own social media site. Make him actually do some fucking work. That's...
Make him do it. You know what I want him to know? Nobody misses him.
No.
No one misses you.
No. And here's the thing. Like, I find that the experience of going on social media is, I would say, equally irritating now as it was in, you know, before he got...
It's different.
It's, yeah.
Different, not less.
It's irritating, but not terrifying, you know? And it was terrifying sometimes when he was tweeting willy-nilly. But despite the fact that he's not on Facebook, he can't be on Instagram anymore. So no, you know, selfies of him in front of a super bloom. He continues to figure out ways to express things that are wrong. Like, he finds it enjoyable to hang out with Ted Cruz, which we know is incorrect. Not enjoy-
totally incorrect. That picture of the two of them was like, enjoy each other.
Yeah. Why are all the pictures backlit? Like, for a totally. Person, for a person that's so vain and image conscious, why are there so many pictures where the light is coming from below him or behind him? Like,
well, let's talk about this though. I'm sure there were other versions of the picture, and this one of him was like, okay, but Ted Cruz looked like a cadaver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That had been in the Hudson.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't put it past Donald Trump to be one of those bitches who posts pictures where his friends look ugly on purpose.
It's literally an episode of Veep.
Yeah. I mean, it also seems like an episode in the head of a narcissist who like thinks it's funny to make other people's lives worse. And Ted Cruz will always come crawling back to Donald Trump no matter what happens. Another thing that Donald Trump has an opinion of is who should have power in the Republican caucus of the House of Representatives, which brings us to our first actual story that we're going to get into. And I'm calling it, you're going to like this, Alyssa.
I'm ready.
Anarchy in the GOP.
Pithy.
I know. I mean, we had all these Dems in disarray headlines for so long. I think it's time that they get their round of anarchy in the GOP headlines.
I love it. I love it. Let's make it happen. Like fetch.
Yeah. Well, fetch didn't quite happen. Gretchen kept.
Right. But it kind of did because we're still talking about
That's true. Gretchen Wieners did make fetch happen. We're going to make anarchy in the GOP happen. So, Alyssa, can you kind of give our listeners a quick rundown of what's been going on with Liz Cheney, Kevin McCarthy, and our BFF, Elise Stefanik?
Okay, so Aaron, tell me if I get it right. Liz Cheney refuses to deny the results of a free and fair election. Therefore, she is an enemy of the GOP state. And not only has she refused at first to not say that it wasn't free or fair, she persists, as our friend EW would say. And so Kevin McCarthy is like, girl, you problem, stop it. And she won't stop being a problem. And now he was caught on hot mic saying, I have just had it with her. He literally talks about her like an insubordinate two-year-old. I have had enough of her. And so all of the GOP males, Donald Trump, too. He's like, ditch that warmongering bitch. All the GOP males are like, you guys, the answer is so simple. One for one. One woman out, one woman in. And so they have set their sights on Trump loyalist Elise Stefanik from upstate New York.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think the Republicans in Congress, we already know that ideologically they're really far removed from the American people in general. But right. I also think that that shows in who they think should be more visible. Like, Kevin McCarthy is just a weenie. He is just a weenie. There's nothing.
A weenie is a good description. He's like a racist weenie.
Yeah, he's just like, and I think being a racist is a weenie character trait. It's weenie. He's a weenie. And, you know, and then we have Elise Stefanik, who is extremely unappealing. Like, she's not particularly smart. She's not particularly interesting. Like, it's like she's both irritating and boring at the same time.
No, but you know what, though? Here's the thing. So I know a little bit about Elise Stefanik because she is from near my house. And the truth is, she is smart and she does have like good traits. She has let her body eat those in service of Donald Trump.
So she's Gretchen Carlsoning, basically. Gretchen Carlson, Stanford grad who played stupid on Fox News, but actually was smart the whole time.
Correct. Because she is actually smart.
Man, and you know what? Then that makes her bad. Like, if you are actually smart, you're pretending to be dumb in the service of your own self-promotion that also harms the rest of the country that you live in, then I think that's called being evil.
As my mom would say, it's disappointing.
Indeed. We should listen to Mrs. Master Monaco about...
She just goes by Lid.
Love that. So Real quick before we move on to the next story, Alyssa, do you think the Republican Party of 2021 can be unfucked?
No, no, because they don't even want it. They don't, they're not trying for it. They are sinking deeper and deeper into the quicksand, you know? And I think at this point, their calculations are totally off because the only person, they're like two people not in the quicksand. It's fucking Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney. They may all drown themselves in quicksand and those two may inherit the party, which I feel like most of the Republican Party would actually be okay with.
Yeah. And you know, when we had Essie Cupp on the show a few months back, actually we recorded on the day of the Capitol insurrection. We came out of recording and it was
so fucked up.
It was so fucked up. But Essie has talked about how she thinks that there's like space for a moderate party. I definitely wouldn't be voting for them, but I don't think that she's entirely wrong. And like there's only like Liz Cheney and Mitt Romney kind of toward the center of the, you know, of center right, you know?
Right. And maybe Lisa Murkowski.
Maybe Lisa Murkowski. Yeah. But it's just like, you know, there is, here's the thing that, that really upsets me about this whole thing. Liz fucking Cheney, who is one of America's worst people, is going to come out of this smelling like a rose. She's going, like, if
she's not even a rose, man. This is like some spring peony level shit. I mean, she is, like, because honestly, when I start watching the news, I'm like, oh, Liz Cheney, why don't they leave her alone?
Right. And then it's like, wait a minute. No, we want Liz Cheney to have to suffer consequences of her bad politics and her bad ideas, but not like this, you know, not like this.
No, this is wrong. This Do you know what I mean? Like we disagree with her, but this is wrong.
This is it's like a monkey paw wish where it's like, I want Liz Cheney to face some consequences. No, not this way. Come on.
Totally.
A different way. And you know, I'm saying this right now. If Liz Cheney ever mounts a run for higher office, like a governor of Wyoming, president, and she is somebody who actually stands a chance of winning those things, we will have this little shitstorm to thank for it. So, like, fuck you in advance, Kevin McCarthy. If Liz Cheney ever becomes a viable Republican candidate for president, fuck you in advance. That's all I have to say.
Though, I mean, I take her over Nikki Haley.
Oh, no.
If in the Republican Party there can only be one woman, I take Liz Cheney over Nikki Haley because Nikki Haley has no character. And we may not like Lynn Cheney's character, but
it's a character.
Liz Cheney. She's at least it's a character and she has stuck by it for her whole adult life.
I guess maybe Liz Cheney rising in the ranks in national politics will draw attention to the fact that Wyoming is ridiculous and shouldn't exist as a state.
But DC should.
And DC should. But what we should be doing instead of everybody moving to Colorado, which is what they're doing from the West Coast, is we should just kind of nudge a few of them into Wyoming. There are some beautiful parts of Wyoming. People in Western Wyoming really speak highly of it. Purple that state up. Really fuck up the Senate.
We can dream big dreams.
Dream big. I would move to Western Wyoming if 100 people would go with me. And somebody would open up a shop that can make like a good cup of coffee. That's all I really want is just 100 people who are nice and coffee.
You know what? I feel like that should be very attainable.
I think so. This is my MLM scheme, Alyssa. I'm just trying to get 100 friends to move to Wyoming. And then they get 100 friends. And then before you know it, we flipped the Senate forever. Okay. Another story I wanted to talk about. A kind of upsetting headline this week indicated that health experts now believe that herd immunity is out of reach for Americans due to a variety of reasons. Alyssa, what was your reaction to that story when you saw it?
Erin, I have a lot of feels about this one. Like, what about it do people not understand? What about looking at what's happening in India right now do people not understand? And, you know, the funny thing is we know last week I was not feeling my best because I had gotten my second shot of Moderna. And you know what, guys? I had chills. I was shivering. My muscles hurt. I had a fever. And guess what? After 36 hours, maybe 48, it was over. And now I am fucking bionic. Like, this is not hard. And, you know, the whole thing that we have been marching toward for 14 months at this point. Herd immunity. Got to get to that herd immunity. Herd immunity is up to us. That's it. You can't blame anybody else. It's up to us. And there are so many people now who are just like, I don't really think I need my shot. And you do. You do. Because the thing that no one understands, here's the thing. They're being willfully ignorant of. It's not that they don't understand, because it's such an easy concept. They do understand it. Is that some of us are vaccinated. This is great. But for all the people who aren't vaccinated, they're going to continue to pass around the virus. And as it continues to be passed around, it will mutate. And the more it mutates, the more possibly our vaccines that we have been vaccinated with will not protect us against some of those variants. This is all in the realm of the possible. And so the funny thing is that we have all the tools to make it not possible, like that we would all be safe. And right now, like you said, a lot of publications and studies are saying that herd immunity will likely not happen in America or many other countries. And you know, the thing that makes me so mad is that you look at what's happening in other countries and you know that if America had led differently in the beginning, that other countries would have followed the example, right? If we shut America down for 2 to 4 weeks, shut everything down, nobody saw anybody, you know, back last April or last May, things could have been really different. And instead, we had a president who was like, COVID's fake. Mm-hmm. And other countries were like, if America isn't on board, then why the fuck are we going to be on board? Mm-hmm. And so now this is just a giant rope-a-dope of a pandemic.
Yeah, I think it's gotten to a point where people are kind of tired of feeling like they're the ones doing all the work to protect everybody else. And we've also, yeah. I think the last year, there was an article in The Atlantic this week that got a lot of people talking about people who are like the liberals who can't quit the pandemic. And some of the points, the article was hit or miss. Some of the points that were made were valid, and some of the points were like, what? But one thing I think that articles about that fall on either side, where it's like, we've been too cautious versus, you know, like, oh, people are afraid of taking their masks off, I'm not taking my mask off, is like, the last year has left us really, has left our trust in each other very wounded. Like, yeah, the thing that I keep hearing from people who don't want to wear their masks or do want to wear their masks, even though the CDC says it's not necessary, even though we have all this research that says it's very difficult to pass outside. The people who still are like, I'm still distancing, I'm still doing all the things, even though I'm vaccinated, even though the science says that I don't have to do it anymore, is because we don't trust each other. We don't trust that people are doing anything whatsoever to take care of other people. You see somebody with a mask off, you don't know if they've been vaccinated or not. And right. You also don't know if, like, you know, did my vaccine take? I don't know. I'm in, like, the early groups. There are people that get breakthrough infections. Like, it's just, like, I just think that, like, there have been all these people who have just lived their life completely normally, like, having huge weddings and partying and all this shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like you said, the virus mutates, the more it gets passed around, it's like a game of telephone. It's like a fucked up game of telephone that can kill you. The more people who are involved, the more chances by the other end it comes out totally different. But I think that, you know, we don't trust each other, and we just don't, there's such a disparity between precautions that cautious people are taking and complete lack of precautions that uncautious people are taking.
Well, and you know what the other thing is too, Erin? Like, until I convalesced on the sofa last week with the vaccine, I hadn't really thought about the fact I haven't been sick in a year, mm-hmm. right? And that's because we took these precautions. So for me, I'm like, well, I think I'm no matter what, I'm always going to keep a mask in my bag, you know, because it was like feeling that sick. I was like, oh my God, you know, living in New York City, taking the subway all the time for all these years. I mean, I get probably 4 or 5 bad colds a year, mm-hmm. and I haven't had one. And so, you know, that's another thing I think people have realized too, that the masks not only kept you from getting COVID, they kept you from getting a lot of other shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not somebody who tends to get sick. When I was a little kid, I was filthy. And also, I think, I just never get sick. But the pandemic kind of made me realize that it is possible for someone like me to be a vector. And I was kind of looking back
right.
on the times that, like, you know, Josh has gotten sick. And it's like, oh, did I just, like, bring it home, not get sick, and then give it to somebody else? So Yeah, I think like some behaviors are just socially good and they're not like that. It's not inconvenient for me to wear a mask in the grocery store. Who fucking cares? You know, it's like, I'm not exerting myself. It's not hot. It's fine, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I think that, you know, if we're going to meet President Biden's goal of having 70% of adults with at least one round of vaccination by the 4th of July, we're going to have to kind of start getting creative. Like we talked on the show about parents telling their parents that there's no visiting with the grandkids unless the grandparents get vaccinated.
Right.
Love that. Love a grandkid hostage situation. I think it's great. I also think that making as much as I don't like restrictions that last forever, I think putting in 5-year restrictions where it's like you have to prove that you're vaccinated if you want to fly, I think that makes sense.
I think that's totally fine. And you know what? Like, I don't know. Maybe it should be part of like submitting your taxes. Who cares? Like, this is whatever we can do. I'm sorry to make it difficult, but like at the same time, guess what? When I was growing up, I had terrible reactions to vaccines. So I didn't get my second measles shot before college. Girl, they hunted my ass down in my dorm room and they were like, you will come and you will get your measles shot or you're not going to class.
Yeah.
Totally reasonable. Got my vaccine. Didn't die. Got a fever. Slept all day. Didn't die.
Well, congratulations on not dying once again. Being alive is a miracle.
30 years ago.
Well, I hope that some of this hesitancy goes away because before the vaccine was rolled out in a large scale, a lot of people, like a distressing amount of people, were saying they weren't going to get it. And that kind of lessened. So I'm hoping that we can chip away at the holdouts. But fingers crossed, we'll be keeping an eye on this. Let's move on real quick. I think this week is Teacher Appreciation Week.
Yes, it is.
And we love teachers on this show. A lot of us, some of our best friends are teachers. Some of our favorite people are teachers. Some of our favorite listeners are teachers. Some of the most influential people in our respective lives have been teachers. So we're going to do a special teachers only toasts. We're not roasting teachers.
No, we're not roasting.
So Alyssa, do you have a teacher you would like to toast?
I do. I would like to toast Remley Forrest Mann. She was my French teacher for all of 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th grade, I think she left. And she just made me so curious. And she made sure that we all learned. We all had to pick French names. Je m'appelle Claudine. And you know, I went on when I left high school, I actually was a French major, for 2 years in college. And there was something, she did not stop. We watched French movies. We read French books and, she never let us kind of just be our own age. Like, she held us to higher standards and everyone who walked out of her class fucking spoke French. And, you know, she encouraged parents to like talk to us at home. And so when I was, my dad and mom both spoke a bit of French. And so we would go around the table. My dad would be like, qu'est-ce que c'est? And I'm like, c'est une pamplemousse, which is a grapefruit.
Oh, and I know that. I drink LaCroix. That's my favorite flavor.
That is the pamplemousse. And my sister was coming down and she thought I was talking to her and she was very little. She goes, I'm not a plump little moose. And she has been moosey ever since, even on her like college applications. She was Moosey Master Monaco. But so, and it all was because of Madame Forrest. And it's something about like learning a new language. You need confidence. Otherwise, you're never going to speak it well. And she just gave us so much confidence. And so anyway, she was fucking dope.
That is amazing.
What about
so
you?
I'm going to be a little bit of a homer here. So I've talked about how I've got, got family members that are teachers. My mom was a teacher. She's now a school administrator. My sister is currently a teacher. She teaches ESL. So I want to single out two teachers in my family who I really think are doing cool shit. My sister, Mary, teaches ESL in St. Paul. Most of the kids she teaches are here in the States because they're like members of groups that are refugee groups. So she has a lot of students that are members of the Karen group, K-A-R-E-N. They're like a Southeast Asian group of people who are oftentimes kind of put out by respective countries. She has a lot of students that are Karen. And she has become so, like, she's so passionate about her kids. Like, she cares so much about them. Last year, there was one family that was almost evicted from their house, and she like got really pissed off and raised all this money and got
I remember this.
Yeah, and she got the Attorney General's office of Minnesota involved, and like she was really like going to the mat for them, and she saved them from being evicted. And you know, she's definitely not like that act is a very special act, but I think that there are teachers all over the place who are doing stuff like that for their kids every day, and it's just so fucking cool. I also want to single out my Uncle Jeff. My Uncle Jeff Ryan, who's a history teacher in Prescott, Wisconsin. He is also a baseball coach there. He's a very good baseball coach, and he's an even – I haven't had him in class, so I can't testify to this, but I've heard from former students of his. I've heard that he's just a phenomenal history teacher. He wins awards for teaching history. He's super involved with First Nations people in the state of Wisconsin. He takes students to reservations, and he's been really active in – getting his students involved in helping change mascot names that, you know, that are offensive to Native Americans. And he's just like really cool. He's one of those people that doesn't need to do everything that he does, but the fact that he does all of it is like kind of an above and beyond thing for him. And he rules. So I just want to shout out my sister and my uncle for both being great teachers and for everybody who goes above and beyond in the classroom all the time. All right, those are our teacher toasts. We know we didn't cover every single possible type of teacher, but you know, we love you guys. We appreciate the work you do. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll have an interview with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
This episode is brought to you by IQBar. Power up your life with superior brain and body nutrition products from IQBar. Their plant protein bars are the perfect low-carb breakfast. Their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks replenish electrolytes. And their IQ Joe Mushroom Coffees will keep you focused all day long.
Start each day right with IQBar's brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. IQBar empowers doers with superior brain and body nutrition. All their products are entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. And today, Hysteria listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text Hysteria to 64,000.
One thing I love about IQ Bar is, first of all, right now it's really dry where I am.
Oh, okay.
It is hard for me to stay hydrated. I'll just be going through my day and I'll be like, why am I so like...
Parched.
I'm parched. I'm in a bad mood. I feel like I'm going to pass out. And it's, you got to drink some water. You got to stay hydrated. I really like their IQ Mix Zero Sugar Hydration Drinks because it allows me to... rehydrate myself at a time when I feel like the atmosphere is trying to take all my moisture away.
Well, and sometimes you need more than just water.
Sometimes you need more than just water. I also love IQ bars because I love a portable breakfast.
I love a grab-and-go breakfast, no dishes.
Love something I can walk around holding and eating. I like something I can eat in my car without endangering the lives of me and every other motorist on the road. A breakfast burrito, not the safest thing to eat behind the wheel. IQ bar, go ahead and do it. Good for you, great ingredients, helps you stay focused and alert throughout the day, and and you don't have to dirty any dishes. Refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ Bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks.
And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, just text Hysteria to 64,000. Get your discount, text Hysteria to 64,000. That's Hysteria to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
And welcome back. We are so excited to be joined today by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. You've heard from her on this show before, but today she's here to talk about some good news. For years, she's been working on legislation to change the way the military prosecutes sexual assault cases. And earlier this week, there is a big breakthrough in that fight. Senator Gillibrand, thank you for stopping by.
My pleasure.
So first off, can you explain to our listeners what changes you and other advocates were fighting for? What stood in the way? and the significance of what happened this week.
So since 2012, really, I got involved in dealing with the fact that there's a huge scourge of sexual assault in the military. And the way those cases are dealt with today is when someone is raped, it is reported, there's an investigation, and then after the investigation, the investigation file goes to the commander. And the commander, with his JAG, decides whether or not to prosecute. And unfortunately, the commander often doesn't prosecute. Very few cases go to trial, and very few cases end in conviction. And so as a result, survivors don't believe that justice is possible. They think that the command is biased and unfortunately untrained because they're not criminal prosecutors and don't have experience in that at all. And so what we're trying to do is create transparency and accountability. We're trying to create a military justice system that's worthy of the sacrifices our men and women are making. And the way to do that is what our allies have already done, which is to take these crimes and, once the investigation is completed, give it to trained military prosecutors to look at the file, decide if there's enough evidence, and move forward if there is. Under that scenario, I believe more cases will go to trial and the right cases will go to trial. And so we will end more of these cases in conviction of rapists. Once you start sending rapists to jail, it will change the culture and it will change the climate, and people will know that these are crimes you cannot get away with. Today, the message that's sent is that you can get away with it, that all you'll get is a slap on the wrist if you even get caught, and that if it's a he said, she said, commanders will more likely believe the he than the she in these cases. Now, just for clarity, more than half of the survivors are men. So these crimes are not crimes that are sex-related, they're crimes of domination. They're about power. And unfortunately, there's sexual assault against men and women in the military. Unfortunately, very few men report these crimes. And so most of our survivors that come forward are women. But it is something that is shared and it is not gender-specific. Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about what happened this week? Like, someone really important came out, changed their mind. Can you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's three really important people that came out and changed their minds. So first, our president, commander-in-chief, impaneled a study being done by Secretary Austin, the Secretary of Defense. And that panel leaked some of their results, and they are recommending that we take it out of the chain of command. General Milley, the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, came out this week and said he's changed his mind. He recommends we take it out of the chain of command. Admiral Mullen, who previously was against this, is now chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has also come out to say. And significantly in the Senate, I'm getting more senators who are supporting. And one is Joni Ernst, who is a Republican command, former commander, and former combat vet, the only female combat veteran on the Republican side in the Senate. And with her now supporting this bill, many Republicans have now changed their mind, and some more moderate Democrats have also changed their mind. So we are well in excess of 60 supporters as of today. And we already have 54 or 55 co-sponsors on the bill, which is clearly a record. And so we are making huge progress, and we should be able to move this legislation and pass it into law this year.
Kirsten, when you first heard that this progress, that all of this was happening, that very important people were changing their minds in large part because of the work you've been doing, did anyone in particular come to mind?
Yes. So all of this activity has been driven by the stories of our service members and survivors. And one of our survivors that testified in our last press conference with Senator Ernst, her name's Amy, and she did everything right. There was nothing that she could have done differently, but justice was impossible for her. Her commander would not prosecute the case when she decided she wanted it to move forward. Justice was not possible. She was retaliated against. Her husband was retaliated against, who's a service member now. His future has been compromised and his promotion was delayed. And she's just lived every part of this system so brutally. And she is just a perfect example. And she's not alone. I mean, this has happened to thousands of men and women. And every story I hear is more upsetting than the next. This also is something that matters for the family of Vanessa Guillen, who what happened to her most recently at Fort Hood is devastating. Not only was she harassed and the command did nothing about harassment, and in fact had a permissive climate for harassment and assault, but she was murdered. And I have met with her family, and the loss of such an extraordinary woman who was very much the future of our military is such a loss for not just the country and not just her family, but for our national security. And it's just the truth of it. And we've lost too many men and women this way. And this is something that I think is welcome news for her family, who have been fighting for her legacy and her memory and her honor for a while.
So it sounds like at this point, you're past the tipping point with like more than 60 senators signing on. Like, and you said that by the end of the year, this will probably get passed. What happens next? And what can our listeners do to get involved?
So what happens next is we will begin to write the yearly Armed Services Defense Authorization Bill. It's called the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA. And we want this legislation to be in the base bill. And so just speaking out, asking the few last Democrats who aren't on the bill to co-sponsor, asking the few last Republicans who are undecided to get on the bill. We want to have 60 co-sponsors. We're at 55. I think we can get to 60 co-sponsors. We have in excess of 60 supporters. But I want their names written on the bill so that we can show the military, particularly, that this is something they should not try to unwind or fight. This is something they should not only accept, but they should work with us on making sure we implement it the most effectively. And I think when the panel that General Austin has been overseeing comes out, or Secretary Austin, that it will be clear that those recommendations are very complementary to our bill and will fit in perfectly in the work we've already done.
Well, Senator Gillibrand, thank you so much for taking the time, and thank you so much for all your work on this, and congratulations on seeing it really getting close to paying off.
We're very close, and we just can't stop advocating now, because again, this is something the Department of Defense has fought every step of the way. There are many people who still do not want this implemented, but for our survivors, for our service members, for all those who have sacrificed so much, they just deserve a better criminal justice system. They deserve one that's unbiased, one that's professional, and one that's reliable, where they can trust it. There's no trust right now amongst the ranks on the criminal justice system. They don't believe commanders have their back. And frankly, commanders shouldn't have to do this. They have to win wars. They have to train our troops. They have real responsibilities. They shouldn't have to be experts in the law. And it's absurd to ask them to be. They need to focus on their core mission, and they can now focus more on good order and discipline, and they can focus more on command climate, and they can focus more on training our troops to be the best in the world.
Well, I'm really grateful for all the work that you've done, and I'm sure our servicemen and women feel the same way. And listeners, if you're hearing this and your senator is not one of the people whose names is on this bill, you should maybe give him a call and let him know that you would like for your senator's name to be on the bill.
And if you're an active duty service member or a veteran and you think this is smart, please say so. To have Admiral Mullen as well as General Milley come out and say, you know, they've been against it for a decade, but now they're for it. That's real leadership. And if you have opinions that you want to be heard, please be heard, because there's been a gag order that no one could outwardly support this bill for the last 8 years if they were active duty. That gag order is officially lifted because our chairman, Milley, has just said so.
Wow. Well, that's great news. So everybody start mouthing off. I think that's Senator Gillibrand's.
Yes, and talking about your own story and what needs to be done.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Senator.
Thank you, Aaron. And thank you, Alyssa. It's so good to see you both. And I appreciate you very much.
Oh, come back anytime.
Absolutely.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
And welcome back to Hysteria. Alyssa is still here with me, and today we're joined by two incredible ladies, both of whom there's a pretty good chance you already know. First, Kara Klenk is a comedian, writer, actor, and one of our favorite returning guest panelists. Welcome to the Three-Peat Club, Kara.
Oh my God.
You and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand are both joining the Three-Peat Club on the same episode.
How exciting.
How does that make
you
feel?
Do I get a robe or something, like on SNL or what?
I think you get a green jacket.
Ooh.
We will make it adjustable so that like post-birth you can... Yes. You can adjust it down.
No jackets fit me right now, so don't try for it.
Okay. Well, we'll do a fitting in like a month for your three-peater jacket. Really excited that you're here today. Up next, she is a writer, comedian, and activist. She is also the author of the mega hit book Shrill and an executive producer of the TV show based on the book, which stars Aidy Bryant. And she has some of the most talented and, in my humble opinion, some of the most interesting and exciting writers in the biz working on that show. It's Lindy West.
Hello. Hi. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction.
It's how are you doing?
I don't know. Fine. I'm fine. It's fine. I don't know. It's spring. It's like beautiful here finally and you can go outside but you know, it's still COVID. I don't know. I'm fine. Everything's weird.
I feel like
does
you
anyone
just
have a good answer?
No, that's true. I think I don't know. I'm fine is like pretty much how everybody's feeling. I don't know. Good, bad. What is good? What is bad?
Yeah. I'm vaccinated.
Hey, cool. Congrats. That's awesome.
I still have my big hot red arm from my injection.
Nice. I felt like somebody had punched me really, really hard. Like, yeah, it really hurt. So Lindy, I had a memory last night. I was rewatching season one of Shrill, and I remember, like, maybe not the last time I saw you, but like the time before that, I was in New York and I was on the train, and this was like after you, like, you've never lived in New York. Was like, what is Lindy doing on the train? And it was like you and your husband and maybe your sister-in-law. And I was like, hey, how's it going? And you were like, I just turned in my manuscript to my publisher. And that manuscript was Shrill.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember, it's so funny that you said that because I just remembered running into you on the train as I was like sitting down to do this. I was like, oh, was that the last time I saw Aaron? And also, a thing I just realized is that Shrill the book came out 5 years ago this week.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations. I remembered when I was having that memory, I was like, and I had just gotten done seeing the gynecologist. So it was quite a confluence. So before we get to the topic that we're going to talk about today, I want to hear a little bit about what's coming in Shrill. Like, can you give our listeners a preview of what they can look forward to in season three?
Yeah. So season three is sort of like her big, like, stepping out season. At the end of season two, she dumps her loser boyfriend and is like, I'm going to go live my big, beautiful life. My big, beautiful, curvy life. That's not how we talk on the show specifically.
I love my curvy life.
I love my curvy life. Yeah. But so then season three is basically, you know, that time when you're in your 20s and maybe you're like, okay, I figured this out. Like, I know what I want. I'm going to go get it. And then you're just like still a failure. It's just sort of like, she is really trying to become an adult and she really feels like she's like self-actualized and then but she's not. And she's still kind of floundering. And, you know, the season I would say is about maybe expectations versus reality. And, you know, I think it was really important to us to convey the fact that, you know, deciding like, oh, maybe I don't hate myself is not some kind of destination. It's like a practice and it's you're not ever actually there. And it's kind of dangerous to assume that you are there. And she, you know, it's about Annie kind of trying to settle into her adult life and not being very good at it and going on some bad dates. Mm-hmm. And being bad at her job.
I mean, I think we definitely need more media about how the promise of your 20s is mostly a scam. Like, your 20s are for falling on your face, and you have to do it. Yeah. You have to do it. but it sucks. It's not fun. It's like,
yeah,
they're, it's not the best years of your life. It is shitty, but that's really okay. Bad. That's really bad, but it's supposed to happen. Like if you're falling on your face, you're like, you're not doing everything wrong, because doing wrong things is sort of a right thing in a way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I would say this season is very humbling for her, and she also learns a lot, you know, which is certainly what my 20s felt like.
Well, good.
I'm good. Excited for more workplace stuff. I love the workplace in Shrill.
That's my favorite stuff for
it's
sure.
It's so great. All the people, Joe and Patty and everybody, are so funny.
I mean, why do we bother writing anything else? We should just
I was going to say, like, I would watch the Shrill spinoff that's just the workplace comedy.
Like, I literally think about it all the time. What can we do a Joe and Patty spinoff, please? Not that I don't love the rest of my work,
of course,
and everyone else. But, oh, my God. There's a lot of Joe and Patty. Because of COVID, it's like we couldn't. It was like, if you had cast members come to Portland, it was like, we got to use them. So there is a lot. There's a lot of Joe and Patty long form improvisation. It's very, very great.
Oh, I love that. You know what? I wish that shows like Shrill like released a director's cut or like commentary. So like you could stream it the regular way, but then you could stream it with like members of the cast or like creators or writers, like talking over it and being like, yeah, we didn't write any of this scene. This is just them going off.
In season one, like the first day Patty was on set and we were shooting and she just did every take. She improvised every take differently and everything was so funny. I was like, what are we going to do? What do we do? Like, I was like, we have to release all of it. It all has to go on the internet somewhere. Like, I don't, but then you can't, I guess that's not how TV works. You don't just send everyone all the dailies.
people would honestly watch those, because when those do get like leaked or somebody, you know, puts them on YouTube or whatever, people like obsess about them. So
I feel like it sounds creepy, but I probably went and just rewatched Patty's dailies more than I like watched the episodes while we were editing. That's not true, but it's like almost true.
Oh my so gosh. Funny. It's like your own personal TikTok with just Patty. Totally. All right. So one of the reasons I'm super excited about having this group together is because we all have different perspectives on motherhood and Mother's Day. And I think that a lot of times conversations about motherhood and Mother's Day is very like bouquet-centric and like bouquets and cards and stuff like that. And I think that the holiday itself is a lot more complicated than, you know, the kind of Zales commercials about the holiday. So, Kara, I'm going to start with you. So how are you planning on spending Mother's Day this Sunday?
Well, I wanted to spend it alone, but
and you have you're married and have
I am married and I have a child, and I have another child 3 weeks away from being born. So I so my first Mother's Day was so funny, because I think of Mother's Day just as like old moms. Like my mom. So people started texting me on my first Mother's Day. I had had a baby like 6 weeks before. And I was like, why are you texting me about Mother's Day? Like, I just like never really put myself in the category for the holiday. I thought it was for old moms, my mom, you know? And then last year was like a COVID Mother's Day. So I was with my pod, like who's another mom and her two kids. And I think this year, now that we're vaccinated, the pod is going to also do a little Mother's Day brunch just with our kids in the morning. And then the afternoon I have off, and I might try to get a massage because I can't really walk very well right now. But I also think I'm trying to book a massage the Tuesday before Mother's Day, like an idiot. So, or it's Wednesday. So like, I probably won't get an appointment, but we're going to do something. Me and my vaccinated mom friend are going to do something away from our children in the afternoon. And I think that's the best of both worlds.
Right. It's like being a mom, celebrating being a mom by imagining that for
that's not who I am. Yeah.
Alyssa, how about you? How are you spending Mother's Day this year?
How am I spending Mother's Day? Well, 45 and without biological children myself, I will be celebrating others. My niece is born next week. And she's lucky she gets two birthdays, one on either side of her birthday. And my mom, it's like, you know, mom has been in quarantine for the last year and a half. And, you know, her parents are getting older. So everyone's getting together and we're taking her out for Mexican on Mother's Day. And that is that's my weekend, you guys. I'm baking things for other people and having Mexican food.
Ooh, that's, I'm jealous of that. Lindy, how about you? How are you spending Mother's Day?
I just sent a text like 20 minutes ago to my, to the family group chat. And I was like, oh, are we, is something happening? Are we doing something? Cause it is weird. It's like, so I'm a stepmom. I have two teenage stepdaughters who are 17 and 19, but they have a mom. So I would never expect them to like come here and like pamper me. You know, I've been their stepmom since they were 7 and 9. So they were little, but like, you know, now they're just like adult women, basically, that I know. I mean, I'm their parent, but and I love them as my children. But like, I don't know. I just, it's like clearly that's their mom's day. And then I have my own mom. And then my husband has a mom. And then my sister-in-law is a mom. I just feel like there's moms everywhere. And so probably what we will do is all go to someone's yard and eat. But what I would really like to do is have everyone leave me alone. Absolutely. And I have a dog. I'm like a dog mom now. And he would never give me any gift. He only takes.
Notoriously cheap.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I think probably we'll go. My sister-in-law just remodeled her house and has a big, beautiful yard. So we will probably do a sort of housewarming yard party. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Impromptu.
That sounds really lovely. But at the yard party, you can be like, nobody talk to me. Nobody even acknowledge me.
That's such a good idea, actually. And absolutely will not be followed.
I think that your attitude is probably the reason why your stepdaughters like you, because I feel like I have friends with like insane stepmoms that would be like, what about me? What about my day? Like, you know. Like,
can you imagine? Yeah. Can you imagine? Like their mother, like, you know, grew them in her body. I don't know. Like, also, what is this? Like, how about just it is okay for women to be left alone on any other Sunday? I don't know. Like, I don't really feel attached. I would love if someone like gave me candy. I bet they'll give me candy. Usually they like give me a cute little card and a candy bar and then they go away.
That's cute. That's I told nice. My husband no flowers too. I was like, I just bought some at Trader Joe's. Just leave it. I don't care. Like, I don't need to watch a beautiful bouquet die over the week and then be like, what's that smell? And then throw it away. I'm good.
Yeah. It's not like someone else throws it away, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. If that was part of the bouquet gift that someone else dealt with the rotten.
Yeah, I'll be
flowers.
The one chopping the bottoms off, putting the plant food in.
Yeah, it's, I think this is the thing that is a challenge for me. So I don't have any kids, married. I have a dog. Again, he doesn't know what day it is ever or care. Like when I texted my mom to be like, what do you want for Mother's Day? She'll respond with something, some like maternal crap that's like the three best kids in the world. But I already have that. And it's like, that doesn't help. I want to buy you something.
Are you kidding? When I was growing up, my Oma, who is no longer with us, she's like such my North Star. Because for Mother's Day, we'd be like, Omi, what do you want? Holly tone for the evergreens. Bags of holly tone. I was like, you got it. We'll carry the holly tone for you.
Wait, is that like fertilizer?
Holly tone is fertilizer for certain ornamental plants and evergreens. And I know because I bought some yesterday and I was like, fucking Omi, you're right here with me, girl. I hope you know.
I love that.
So, you know, it sounds like we all have like decent maternal relationships in our lives. Do you think that like sometimes the culture around Mother's Day sort of promotes a toxic positivity around moms for people who maybe didn't have a great relationship with their moms? Like, have you, like Alyssa, have you ever known somebody who Mother's Day is difficult for because it's complicated for them?
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, my husband's mom died when he was younger, you know, much younger. And that's always like, you know, you just, I think that before you impose your feelings about Mother's Day on anybody, it's just kind of like, how do you feel about it? Like, do you want to come down and see my mom? Is it weird for you? You know, does it make you uncomfortable? Do you, you know, want to burn a candle? Like what, you know, what's good for you? And I think it's, we don't do that enough, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Lindy, what has your experience been with like more complicated maternal relationships around Mother's Day?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think any kind of enforced merrymaking around any holiday is kind of inappropriate and aggressive. And also, I do not relate to it. You know, I feel like my I have several friends whose mothers have passed away, and you know, in recent years as we get older, and I feel like my friend group is really like tender and kind and always making sure to reach out to those people. Like everyone reaches out to me on Father's Day. My dad died 10 years ago. Like, I feel like there's a way to, you know, honor the mothers that mean something to you in your life, and also give space for sadness for people with more complicated maternal relationships. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard for me to feel like, never mind. This sentence is taking a dark turn. I was about to say, it's really hard for me not to feel like everything is meaningless. I mean, like, does anyone know like what Mother's Day is or where it came from? Like, I feel like it's just this thing that we're supposed to do. And again, I enjoy the candy once a year, but, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's easy to kind of, as long as you, like, you don't need to like buy in 1,000% to mm-hmm. everything, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think it's important to, in order to be respectful and careful with the complexities of the world and everyone's feelings, you gotta like keep some perspective and be like, this isn't really a real thing. It's real in the ways that you make it real and important in your own life. But, you know, you have to remember that everyone has different experiences and mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're being sold something in conjunction with a holiday, it's really important to be like, wait, do I want this? Or am I being told that I want this? Like, what do I really want to do here? I was like in my group chat with my friends from college. Between us, there are 15 children between my group of Whoa. College girlfriends. Catholic school. So, you know, we were talking yesterday about things like push presents and baby moons.
Oh, God.
And I was telling my friends, like, I seriously don't remember, like, growing up, I don't remember push presents being a thing. I remember the first time I heard the word baby moon and being horrified. So I was like, that's not a real thing. It just seems like every opportunity there is to like market some aspect of motherhood back to mothers, it's like being done. And Kara, I was actually thinking about you yesterday as I was putting the show together, because it seems like a lot of like the social expectation on moms is like, once you have a kid, you stop being a woman and you start being a mom. You like disappear into being a mom. But like, I knew you before you had kids and you pretty much seem the same, except you just have a kid now. Like, did you find it difficult to push aside the expectation that you would disappear into motherhood?
Yeah. I mean, I think to a certain extent, there are women that lean into that. And then I think that there's also the societal, you know, pressure of it. So like, I definitely was leaning far away from that. Like, I mean, I was like, I'm still going to perform. I'm still going to, I kept my pregnancy a secret for so long, because I was like, I still want to get hired for like writing jobs. You know, like, I don't want anyone to think that like, oh, she's a mom now, she's out. Like, file her under unavailable, you know? So I don't even have a social media post about my current pregnancy. Like, I recently posted a photo where I look enormous, and my friend said she was getting a lot of texts from people being like, is Kara pregnant? And she was like, if she's not, something is really wrong. Because
changing size that drastically in 8 months is not a normal
I'm having a bad COVID experience. Yeah.
Right.
No, but Yeah. So I do think that some women like lean into that and like, I don't know, maybe the, I don't know, you know, identity is complicated, like, but it becomes their full identity. Like I am a mom and I have specifically tried to lean against that and been like, I am many other things besides a mom. And I'm glad to see that it's come through and you noticed.
I did indeed notice. Lindy, like you've been a stepmother for now 10 years, you were saying. Did becoming a stepmom like change the way that people treated you? Or do you think that like the pressure for stepmoms to disappear into being stepmoms is less than it is for biological moms?
It's less. I mean, if anything, mm-hmm. like it hurts my feelings that people act like I'm not really a mom. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I feel like people don't take it seriously. Mm-hmm. When, you know, it, when I look back and it's like, okay, well, I've been raising these girls since I was in my 20s, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm almost 40 now. Like, that's a big chunk of my life. And it's, you know, I don't, it's different. It doesn't have to be different, but the way that our family is organized, it's different. Like they're so close with their mom. I feel, I wouldn't feel comfortable like imposing my will on them. You know, I don't do like, you know, I don't like make decisions for them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I think like if I thought that they should like go to a different school or something, like, I don't feel like I have that authority. Mm-hmm. Which I think is fine. I'm sort of like backseat parent, but I'm still here. Like, I'm still like driving them to their activities and giving them advice and listening to them and taking care of them and making their food. I mean, like, I don't know what the boundaries are of mother. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of a maternal, I think I have a maternal presence generally, which is maybe something that we like just apply to fat nursey ladies, but I don't know, I've embodied it. But you know, if anything, it's the opposite, where it's like people underestimate how much of a mother you are if you're a stepmother. It's like we mm-hmm. don't, and I feel like the term is loaded, like the relationship is loaded. People think of it as a negative relationship a lot of the time, because, you know, a lot of people are bad at being a step parent. But for me, I mean, I feel so close to my daughters. There's a weird struggle, even like, I feel like when I call them my stepdaughters, I'm creating a distance there mm-hmm. in the listener. And I don't want to, I want to call them my daughters without, again, like claiming more motherhood than than is accurate. Anyway, mm-hmm. it's kind of complicated, but I am not victim to that thing where you are erased, mm-hmm. where your selfhood is obliterated. Mm-hmm. it's obliterated in other ways, mm-hmm. But not that one.
What are some things that people do that make you feel, like you said, it makes you feel a little bad. What are some things that people do when they talk about you and your daughters that makes you kind of say like, ah, don't do that?
It's more just like, I feel like if I have to, you know, cancel plans because of something with the kids, there, I feel this vibe of like, well, okay, but they're not really your kids. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not taken as seriously, mm-hmm. by, and I don't have, I mean, I'm not like trying to do call out culture on my friends, but it's like, I just have always gotten, a sense that like, it's just not as real. And therefore can't possibly have as big a bearing on my life as if this was a child I gave birth to. Mm-hmm. But I don't ever want the girls to feel like that, or to mm-hmm. feel like I believe that, you know, mm-hmm. and I take the responsibility really seriously. So yeah, you know, it's like if someone wanted me to go on a trip with them, but like one of my kids was graduating from middle school or something, it's like, well, I can't. I gotta be here for this thing. And I've always felt like there's this expectation of like, well, but do you though? Like,
right.
I mean, like, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
It's my kid.
That's really interesting. I don't know a lot of step parents, and that does sound like something that would be very grating. Cause it's like, just because you biologically don't like weren't part of their birth, Like, there are men have very little to do with the germination of human babies, and dads get credit, you know, for being caretakers, and their relationship is respected. And it just is, it's unfortunate that that doesn't extend to female caretakers that didn't biologically give birth to the kids. So Alyssa, one of the things that we've seen a lot of people hand-wringing about, but then we've also seen people kind of praising, is the fact that there are more women than ever who are choosing not to have children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was reading that old Rebecca Solnit essay, The Mother of All Questions, about how she's just this, like, well-respected writer, thinker, genius, and people were still asking her at, like, literature-related forums why she didn't have kids, which is nothing. Nobody would ever ask a man that question.
No.
Do you think that, you know, as somebody who has, you know, chosen to have cat children instead of human children.
Oh, don't say that. People are going to come at me on Twitter. It's not the same, Alyssa. Like, I fucking don't know, okay? Assholes.
No, if anybody does that, I will come for you on Twitter and I will not be
I'll
nice.
I'll say, oh, have you seen my cat Midge? Okay, she was nearly dead. I got rid of all of her teeth. I got her a nose job. Now she's thriving. Okay, fuck off.
Do you think, like, in your lifetime, have you seen it become more accepted for women to choose not to have children? Like, and do you get questioned about your decision, and how do you respond when people are assholes about it?
So mostly it's other women, you know, it's like, I'd love to be like, oh, dudes are like, oh, listen, you didn't have their, they get it. You know, they, the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me was I was on a panel at the DNC, and I was the youngest deputy chief of staff at the fucking White House. And this woman stands up, this young woman, and she's like, you've done so much, but you are of advanced maternal age, AMA, and you don't have kids. And did you give that up to do this? And I was like, No, that's not what happened here. You know, I think that what people misunderstand is that there also aren't just these, like, massive conscious decisions. Like, I didn't say at age 34, I am not having kids. I am putting my career first. No, it's that actually my career was about taking care of people. And even though I never wanted to get married, but I always wanted to have kids, I got to... you know, I met the Obamas. I had this great job. And what happened is, like, all the kids who worked for me were like my kids. Like, I took care of them. I took care of everyone on the fucking 1800 acres of, or 18 acres, not 1800, 18 acres of that complex. And at one point I was just like, I think I'm good. I mean, I feel like sometimes we have reserves, right? We have reserves of how much we can give of ourselves. And I think that in some ways that was as much as I had to give of myself. And I have to tell you that I vomited out almost this exact thing to that woman at the DNC. And I was like, I could have had kids if I wanted. It just wasn't right. I didn't have a partner. You can do it without a partner, but people are forgetting. Like, I talked to my doctor once about freezing my eggs, which is, this is 10 over 10 years ago at this point. And he was like, he's a genius, this guy. And he was like, I'm just going to be frank with you. Anyone trying to freeze your eggs right now is basically like telling you that freezing rotten peas are going to come back fresh when you thaw them out. And I was like, just thank you. Thank you for the truth. That's all I wanted. And, you know, I could have had kids. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I think I'm cool. Look, I think I have a nice life. I think I'm okay. And I have lots of... Here's the thing, though, about not having kids. You end up as a godmother to so many. Mm-hmm. And you also... the one thing that I have always struggled with is that you are the person who has no logical excuse for not wanting to do things for other people. It's like, oh, what do you mean you can't work late? you don't have kids. Yeah, no, but I have a body and it's tired and I'm going home. But I do think that, I mean, to this day, you know, I'm so glad to be 45 because when people ask the question, I'm just like, I'm 45. Like, stop asking me the question. The jaws of life are not being invoked here.
I mean, okay? There are moms in my mom group that are like, first time mom at 50, I have some questions.
Which is good for them, but they haven't suffered with IBS their whole life. It's like, I am not using hormones to jack up my already jacked up system. But people look, it's like this time of year, which is why I'm so glad to actually be included in this panel, because normally people like me around this time of year, they're like, are your cats getting you something? Are you sad? Do you feel lonely? I don't feel lonely. I feel fine. I feel fine. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But it is even still, people are like, oh, could you not have kids? You know, and it's like, there's no idea that, you know, some people don't have cars. I mean, I don't know.
It's like, also sometimes like nobody you just end up without things. Nobody would ask a man that. Nobody would ask a man that.
No, it is because guess what? A man can have a kid at 70.
Yeah, right. Well.
And it's like not a problem.
We're discovering that that is actually dangerous now. Well,
right. You
know, there's risks that come with that kind of thing. But like, I just think in general, there are some very, I'm not a mother and these questions irritate the fuck out of me. Who's babysitting your kids?
Oh.
Moms get asked that. Dads don't get asked that. Dads being referred to watching their own, dads watching their own children being told they're babysitting? No.
Yeah.
No, they're the dad.
No. A man who's 45 who doesn't have children being asked, oh, did you just decide not to have kids? No. Leave people alone. leave everybody alone. And Alyssa, we have to wrap up so we can get to I Feel Petty, but I wanted to come back to kind of something that you were saying, and I think it ties into Kara's experience and Lindy's experience also, is that the idea that women need to have kids or that like motherhood is somehow this fulfillment of this feminine ideal is based on logic from a world where motherhood was the only way for women to be of influence. Like, right. Women could only be of influence if they gave birth to children and within the sphere of the home taught the children things. But you can be massively influential as a woman. Like Lindy, as a writer, I meet people all the time who ask what it was like to work with you. And I'm like, cool. It was cool when Lindy wrote that thing about Love Actually sucking and like started the discourse about that movie being a piece of shit. Like,
thank God for me.
Right. I mean, thank God for you. But you know, you meet people all the time as a writer, as somebody that's creating stuff probably, who are like, thank you for writing that. You know, you did a book tour of people who filled up bookstores to see you talk about your book because it influenced them. Like, you have your stepdaughters who I'm sure are massively influenced by you. And like Alyssa, you working and having all those people learning how to be adults from you.
It's like, true. What's, and you know what? Let me just tell you what the motherless, I mean, what the childless women are doing. Okay. While you guys are raising tomorrow's leaders and people who are going to do good things for the planet, we're building the lanais, which you will want to retire on. It will be a cocktail waiting for you. Okay. We all have our role to play in society.
Indeed. And happy Mother's Day to all of you, however you're celebrating. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I Feel Petty. And welcome back. We are almost at the end of the show, but not quite. We're at the part of the show where we take really adamant stances about things that don't really matter. It's I Feel Petty. So here's the thing I am feeling petty about this week. So, you know, during the pandemic, I've been thinking a lot about spending time outside and how nice it is to just be able to go walk around in some grass, maybe stand under a tree. And I have concurrently noticed that a lot of houses are built on these big lots to take up the entire fucking lot. I think houses and apartment buildings should not take up entire lots. I think you need to leave some space for yard. People need space to go outdoors and just walk around. People need space to go outdoors and like put a chair down and sit there with a book. People need space to be outdoors. It is inhumane to build all these giant McMansions that have like 1 foot of space on the edge of their lot. I just think it's senseless. We need to stop doing that. That's what I feel petty about.
Erin, my ma calls that the 2-acre house on the 1-acre lot.
Oh man, that is it. That is exactly what it is, and it sucks. And it doesn't look good either. I mean, I understand in like dense cities, like a downtown or like a New York or, you know, San Francisco, there are parts of the city where it makes sense that you would build it out because you actually need that space, because a lot of people are trying to live in a small amount of space. When you've got a family of four, you don't need, what are you doing? Building a house to the very edge of the yard. It's craziness. Okay.
It's so appropriate because that is a thing that my mom obsessively comments on and has been for my whole life. If we're like on a walk, it's every time it's like, look how close. Wow.
Oh, yeah. That used to be my dad's pet peeve.
Right up to the property line.
Ugh. 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 I bet you can see them shower.
Yeah. Ugh.
Ugh. I mean, like, do you really want to? Look, I've lived in cities my entire adult life, and there is an appeal to rural areas and suburban areas when you're ready to have like more space. And it's like, I'm kind of ready to not be able to possibly hear my neighbors having sex.
You're really growing up, Erin.
I am. It's called hashtag grow. Alyssa, what are you feeling petty about this week?
Speaking of lots of land, we live kind of in the middle of nowhere, and we have a set of neighbors who go around telling everyone that, like, we don't want to hang out with them, and that I drive by and I wave, but I don't stop and talk. And like, you guys, why do I have, I don't want to be friends with everybody. Like, COVID, guess what COVID taught me? That I could get rid of 60% of the people who I'd been associating with and live just fine. And so anyway, but they've gone around, and every now and again, I'll see the people who I like, who are my friends. They'll be like, you know, so-and-so was saying the other day that you just like drove by and you waved, but you didn't stop. And I'm like, this is upstate gossip, you guys. And for a very long time, I felt guilty about it. I was like, God, should I like stop? But now it's awkward because they've said it to people. Guess what? I'm only ever going to wave for the rest of my life. I've said it here. That's it. I'm just waving at you. My blue Subaru, sometimes I roll the window down and I wave outside the window. Sometimes I give the little flash over the steering wheel like I'm a cool guy in 1985 in high school. But mostly I just, hey, hi. Very enthusiastic inside waves.
I think a wave is more than enough.
A wave is great.
Yeah, a wave is nice.
It's fine. You guys, sometimes I'll just wave to anybody, though. So maybe they feel like I'm not discriminating because they're just people who go down the road. And I'm like, hi, because you never know when you're going to run into them up here. I could see them at the barbecue place. It's like, who knows?
I think that's perfectly fine. You don't have to be friends with everybody. You don't have to be friends with anybody.
No, especially not anymore. It was different 2 years ago. Now it's a whole new world.
I agree with that one. Kara, what are you feeling petty about this week?
I mean, this is really silly and petty. So this is like, I feel like the only place I could really bring this up, but I'm like really, really annoyed about Elon Musk hosting Saturday Night Live in a way that should not be bothering me this much. It doesn't fucking matter, but I do watch SNL every week. Like I'm just the person that does that. Even when there's not one single sketch that makes me laugh, I'm like, I'll be back next week. And I just like, I don't even know if I'm going to watch this week. I just find it so annoying that they would think that this is an okay guest to have. It's like, they learn nothing from Trump. This is like a COVID denier millionaire who, by all accounts, has not a funny bone in his body. I don't listen to Joe Rogan's podcast. Was he funny on it? Like, why is this man getting this opportunity? It's annoying to me. And
yeah, are men
funny? It makes
funny,
absolutely
though?
No difference to my life, and that's why it is the ultimate petty thing to talk about.
I mean, he's basically a supervillain.
Yeah.
Like, ethics aside, is there a bigger sinkhole of charisma? Like, he's the most, like, he's the least appealing person just in a vacuum. Like, if I didn't know anything about him, he's the least charming person I've ever perceived.
Yeah. The cast is already roasting him. If you look at the tweets announcing him doing it, there is no positive ones. Like, even the like Elon Musk bros like have not come to his defense on this. Like, everybody is like, why? Like, so I just really don't get it. Am I going to watch? I haven't decided.
I feel like the people that are the excited, if there's a Venn diagram between people excited about Elon Musk hosting SNL and people who think women aren't funny, I think it would be a circle.
Oh, it's a full, it's a thick circle.
There's no daylight in between that, those two layered circles. It's not even a Venn diagram. Lindy, why don't you bring us home? What are you feeling petty about this week?
So my older daughter went on her first road trip a couple weeks ago. It was so cute. She and her best friend drove to California from Seattle.
Oh.
And I know, it was so cute. And the car broke down an hour outside of San Luis Obispo, just on the side of the highway. It was nighttime.
Oh, no.
It's not a town. She didn't have cell service. Her friend had a little bit of cell service. The car's toast, by the way.
They had
to fly back.
Oh, God.
But so she's on the side of the road. She's texting me from her friend's phone. And I was like, okay, well, here's what you do. Here's the insurance company. Anyway, so she calls the insurance company and then they set up the tow truck and whatever. And then they're like, by the way, because of COVID, you're not allowed to ride in the tow truck. And they will leave you on the side of the highway.
What?
So I was like, okay. So I was like, well, okay, Penelope, can you, you know, look and see if there's like a town close enough that you could get an Uber or something. And she was like, there's nothing. There's no town with a taxi. Like, we're literally just in the middle of nowhere in California. And then I was like, okay, I guess you have to call the cops. Like, I don't know what else to do. I don't have any friends in that area.
Oh, my God.
So the highway patrol has like a non-emergency number that is only active during peak hours. So that was nothing. So I was eventually like, okay. And the punchline to the story is that then later she was like, oh yeah, one of my best friends goes to Cal Poly. I was like, why? After this whole thing, but whatever. So children don't know how to solve problems. So I was like, yeah, I guess you gotta just call 911. So she calls 911 and talks to the dispatcher who's like, yeah, we'll send a highway patrol person out. And then the dispatcher said, like, okay, well, I'll send an officer out, but I can't guarantee that he'll give you a ride. We're not a taxi service. What are you? What? She can't get a taxi service. They're like, we know you're not a taxi service, but what is your purpose? What is your purpose? You just leave children on the side of the road? You just want to leave? Aren't you? Is your job to protect the people on the highway that are like, you patrol the highway. Is your job is only to kill people? Like, what is your job? What is your job? I'm still so mad about it. And what ended up happening, of course, is that the creepy tow truck driver was like, oh, yeah, you can ride with me. You don't even have to wear a mask. And then like sexually harassed them for an hour.
Oh, God.
But it's like, he told my daughter that she should play D&D and she'd make a great bard because they're very sexual.
Oh, no.
And he told them that his favorite class in high school was history, especially Civil War history, when the country had good morals.
Oh,
and they're both black, by the way, these girls. Anyway, I was like, please call 911 again. Just like, I'm still so mad about we're not a taxi service because it just felt like such a revealing moment of how law enforcement thinks, of itself. I shook this earbud right out of my ear with my rain. Like,
well, because what else were they doing?
Yeah.
Like, what was there some massive emergency outside of San Luis Obispo that they couldn't do that? Like, that's fucking bullshit.
I can't even conceive of another purpose for them besides rescuing stranded motorists.
Uh-huh.
Unless there's like, yeah, I guess a OJ chase
something.
Or I don't know.
You sound like a character in like an SVU. Like, and then we cut to the bodies and it's like, oh, if you had just gone and sent someone to pick them up, this could have been avoided. Like, you're terrible.
Yeah. And we know Olivia would have picked them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would.
Olivia would have picked. You know what we need, Lindy, as you were saying that, I was like, you know what? Teachers get subjected to like ratings, like based on performance, based on blah, blah, blah. And it's like you know, a low performing teacher in New York City, at least, can be like rubber roomed. So they don't get to teach kids anymore. We need to do that with like police departments so that like people can rate police departments and low performing police departments get money taken away from them. And like they don't get fancy like weapons grade tanks to drive around in. Like their budget gets just a Chevrolet and with a light on top. And that is it. And your only job is to keep people safe. Like that is like, yeah. 'Cause what's your recourse? Like you can't, you could just talk about it on a podcast and be like, fuck these guys. But like, what else can you do?
Right. What, and you know what made me so mad is that taxi service for stranded girl is the best thing you could be. Yeah. Like, you know, what is the higher purpose for you besides killing? Like literally, like what? Shooting someone? I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you call the fire department and you're like, my cat stuck up a tree. They're like, well, we're not exactly a cat sitting service. You know what I mean? Like, we'll see if we can get there.
Oh yeah. That's the other part. It's like, we pay you. Go get my child. I feel like I like the rating. Like if we had Cop Yelp.
Yeah.
And it was like, there's a thing where you can rate your professor, but yes, it's all like unfuckable, 0 stars. I'd like to write that.
Yelp does have reviews of prisons. I have read Yelp reviews of prisons. So I wonder if there are like Yelp reviews of police departments that like are just, I bet you there's some funny ones out there.
That would be, you know, an upside of our future tech dystopia where everything is determined by social media clout is
There's a Yelp.
Oh, good. Good. Well, we're going to go on there and give them bad ratings today as soon as we get done with this. We've run out of time. Alyssa's over here laughing and can't breathe.
The NYPD's not doing well on Yelp.
How about the San Luis Obispo PD? Slow PD.
I'm looking right now.
One star. I'd give them 0 stars if I could. Okay.
San Luis Obispo is 2.5 out of 5.
Oh, well, we got to bring that rating down. Kara and Lindy, please. Thank you so much for coming by today. This was a great conversation, and happy Mother's Day to both of you. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Thank you to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, and thank you to you, the listeners. There will be more hysteria for you next week. I am from another planet. This nation, fuck Janet.
But these girls gotta fan it. Y2K email. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Our digital team is Nar Melkonian and Matt DeGroote. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.